Welcome to The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
Welcome, welcome, welcome once again to The Waggle podcast, a special edition, but as always, brought to you by friends at Sport Clips, who are known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience, which includes shampoos massaged right into your scalp, hot steam towels, which is the best part of the experience, directly on your face. Sometimes I fall asleep when they put the hot steam towels on. And I wake up when I hear some noise from the sports on the TV, like football, the best sport ever, hockey, baseball, basketball, but let's be honest, it's normally on football. It's good to be a guy. It's good to be a Sport Clips guy. It's good to be watching football in this country. We have so many great people covering it. So many great Black people covering it. And that's the basis of our conversation this week. Some of the Black excellence that we see in our media, our sports media, and specifically in and around the CFL. And joining me to have that conversation are Milt Stegall and Jermaine Franklin, analyst and host, respectively, for TSN. Jermaine spent the bulk of his career covering the league in Calgary. He covered hockey in the Flames as well, but St. Peter's fans know what a good job he did on that beat. And Milt was not only a great quote as a player, he's also a great quote as a broadcaster. And we actually get into some great quotes from both of them about their experience as Black broadcasters and as Black men. That conversation next on this Black History Month edition of The Waggle. Thanks, both of you, for doing this. And first and foremost, before we even get into your roles and your experiences, I mentioned it is Black History Month. You know, we got to make sure we celebrate all 28 days. We only got 28. But what is, and I'll start with you, Mil, what is the importance of this month for you in 2021?
Well, I like you alluded to earlier, Donovan. I mean, it's more than just a month. You know, Black history, America is American history. Black history is Canadian history. It shouldn't only be relegated to a month, but it's good that we are getting a month. You know, that's special. You know, back in the days, it was a couple of days or a week or whatever. So we have to make sure that we educate all those who aren't up on all the things that Blacks that done in the past and continue to do to make this world what it is. So, we try to stress my kids where they go to school. Both of their schools are predominantly white. So we make sure that all the African-American parents make sure that this month is stressed. Black history is all about American history. You know, we only have this one month. So we want to make sure it's pounded into not only the Black kids, but every single individual in that school. What Blacks have done for this country.
For you, Jermaine, I don't know how you felt or experienced it growing up as a kid, but for me, the only Black history I learned about in school was of American history. I had to go deep and figure out the Canadian history in terms of Blacks in Canada for myself. But what is the importance for you with this month?
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Donovan. It's true. Like, didn't learn a ton of Black history growing up here in Canada. Like it just wasn't part of the curriculum. But what Black History Month means to me, it's a celebration and it's also about education. And I think that's something that even in my adult years, I continue to learn more and more. As Black men, we all know, because we're here, what it takes to survive as we come through. And that's just the fact. And it doesn't have to be dramatic. And I'm not trying to be dramatic about it. But living as a minority, like you said, Milt, whether it's in Canada or the United States or elsewhere around the world, you figure out pretty quick that you're different. And then you figure out pretty quickly how to survive and hopefully thrive and live comfortably in a different way. And I think Black History Month, the education, the history, and then the realization of what you can do to help others understand what it means to be Black, how important it is to be a part of society and how we have made society better. And it's a continual, to me, you just got to continue to grow. And I'm not going to front Donovan. I got a lot of growing to do still, and I'm looking forward to it.
How so?
Well, like you mentioned, this month, I'm sure you've been a little extra busy, and this Black History Month, it always gets a little busier in February, which is great. But this year was unlike any other in my lifetime, and I'm sure in most lifetimes. This year, with the turmoil and the Black Lives Matter, and the obvious, especially down south, growth that needs to happen, it was a wake up call. It was definitely a wake up call. And when you think that you're at a certain level or at a certain stage, you realize that's not the case, and that's certainly not the case everywhere. And what have I done to make sure that the George Floyd incident doesn't happen in my community? What have I done to make sure that people understand that everybody should be equal? And a lot of times, the easy answer is, oh, you know, just live life right, you know, and hopefully it'll rub off. I have, I've grown up in a mainly white town, and I, you know, the hope is, you know what, they'll see me and maybe they'll give black people a chance. Like, that's just a very basic thing. That doesn't happen, you know. That just doesn't happen, because quickly you realize that you're seen, like Milt and I and you, Donovan, we're seen as an exception. Oh, those guys made up, they're not like other black people. Like, wow. I've heard that always growing up. Like, Jermaine, you're cool, but you're not like those other, you're not like those other. Have you not, am I speaking out of turn here, Donovan? Have you heard that before?
You make them feel safe and comfortable.
Yes. And, wow. And then you think, and it's hard. It's hard to confront all the time. But by not doing it, well, what have I done? So that's the one thing. I don't want to be an excuse for someone to say, yeah, I'm not racist because, you know, I got a black friend, and then my picture pops up. You know, it's very tough to bring it a full circle. But like I said, with that question, Donovan, I am still learning, and there's still a long way to go to help others realize that integration isn't just one friend that you can count on to say, okay, I'm good. It's learning about other cultures. It's integrating fully with other people.
What you were saying, it was like, wow, it hit home. And it, even when I was growing up, and even now, I was put into a different black box because of the color of my skin. So I was put into that dark box where I've had people tell me, you know, we're usually intimidated by the darker skinned blacks, but because of the relationship we have with you, you know, you're not like the other darker skinned blacks. So I've even gone, people have even said that. I heard that in college, because the college I went to, it's crazy. And it still happens to this day. It's unfortunate, but it still happens to this day.
Yeah, you're not on Team Light Skin with Drake and Brad. You're darker.
You know, no, I wanted to be down with Al B. Shore, but I couldn't, you know?
Oh, man. You know, it's funny because, well, one, the thing I hear when I hear you, you know, you talking, Jermaine, is imagine if we said to, you know, a white colleague, or just you know, someone who comes into your life, you know what, you're not like those white people who stormed the Capitol. You're one of the good white people. Like, we would never ever say that, nor could we. But no. If it's flipped around and turned on us, it's like, oh yeah, you're safe, as if that's supposed to be a compliment. And you know what I'm hearing is, like, we have to make others feel comfortable always. And whether as soon as we leave the house, where's my phone? When I get on public transit, where's my ticket? I'm in a store. I'm showing that I'm actually buying something. Even unconsciously, every decision that we're making, we're trying to make other people feel comfortable. Don't walk too closely behind this woman. Come on the elevator. Get off first. Go to where you're going. And so we're in a permanent state of uncomfort. And it's, you know, just the way we are. And I wonder how that manifests for you guys in your careers, both, you know, as a player, certainly in CFL or as covering the CFL, but also often in times where you're like the minority to a higher power, even more so. What was that like for you, you know, navigating, you know, being a part of the CFL in Canada?
That's a great question, Donovan. And when it comes to work and relating it to work, I remember when I first got the job with TSN, and it was quick in terms of the hire. And I'm originally from Toronto, and I said I grew up in a mostly white town. It's Stouffville. Stouffville is where I grew up for most of my life, and I got the job and I move out to Calgary. And I remember a quick conversation I had was with Danny Barrett. And he's like, I noticed you on camera. And I was like, thank you. He's like, you're doing a good job. And then he's like, you know, you gotta kill it, right? Because you know who you're representing, right? And I'm like, oh, I got you, Danny. And that's not the only conversation that I've had. It was like I was representing people everywhere. When I say people, Black people everywhere. I'm there. I got in. Now it's time to represent and show that more can move forward. And that is, I wouldn't say there is a pressure to it, but it's not something you think about. It's not something you think about all the time. But when I ask a question, I want to make sure I know what I'm talking about. Because if I start fumbling, then all of a sudden the preconceived notions may come in. You understand what I'm getting at? So I rarely talk with slang. I rarely talk Ebonics. When I'm in the job and when I'm doing my job, because I don't want anybody to have the opportunity to fall back and, you know, see, I knew it. That guy isn't really educated. And that's unfortunate, but it's the truth. So in terms of navigating through work with the CFL, I found the CFL my favorite league to cover, because to tell you the truth, the players are 99.9% outstanding to deal with, and they always seem to have time to talk to you. And that's Black, white, you know, Samoan, Hawaiian, whatever. The players have always been outstanding. The coaches have been difficult. Not because of the color of your skin. They're just difficult. They're not telling you any secrets. And trust me, I dealt with Hufnagel, right? So, but when I flip it real quick, because I don't want to take up all your time, but when I flip it to the NHL, that's a little bit different, because there's not a lot of people like me. There's not a lot of players like us. And all of a sudden they're like, does this guy even know what he's talking about? Does this guy, you know, right? It's like, and that's where you got to be careful, because, well, you don't have to be careful, but that's where you have to represent the most, I think, when it comes to other sports like the NHL, that is still predominantly white, and you are still dealing with predominantly white authority figures like coaches and so forth among predominantly white media. So, and that's another touchy subject, Donovan, because you don't want to become just like everybody else around you. We're different for a reason. We bring a different perspective. If we become part of that, you know, completely blend in, then what's the point? So, so there's a lot of different angles that you can talk about and bring about that you honestly don't necessarily think about every minute of the day, but it's subconsciously there always.
Always, yeah. Well, for me, and this still happens every now and then. I'm sure this happened to you guys also. And it took me back to a time in college where, and I'll use this example. It was a time in college. I went to a college. Every single class I had, I was only black in it. And I remember it happened twice. A professor gave me back a paper, and I got a B+ on this paper. And twice it happened to me, the professor said, "Good job." And I watched the professor go around the classroom, and he didn't say another word to another individual, basically saying he was surprised I got a B+. And I put that in the mindset. I would hear people say to me, "Wow, we didn't know you were so articulate." Because every now and then I like to use some big words. And I'm sure you guys have heard that a million times. "You're so articulate." People think that's a compliment when they say that to us. But I mean, I just let it pass by me, but it happened really on in my career. Because, you know, when I was playing, I was having fun. I was boisterous. I would use slang every now and then, Ebonics, as they call in my interviews. You know, I was just marketing myself. But once I got on camera, you know, I wanted to speak in a studious way and show that I'm a student and all those things. So people, "Wow, you're so articulate." But they wouldn't say anything else to the other guys on the panel at all when they came into the studio, when they saw us out of the game. That was something I always heard. "You're so articulate." Now, like I said, I'm sure you guys have heard that a million times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. It's like, I suppose it's a compliment, but what did you expect?
Yeah, like,
what did you expect? I mean, I graduated. Why shouldn't I be able to speak well? You know, the thing I loved, is a couple years ago, turning on the TV, and it wasn't express, but I looked at the entire panel other than Rod, and it was all black faces, and I tweeted about it.
I remember that. You know, I remember that.
It was powerful for me because it was jarring to see, even though, like, of course, these guys are stars in the roles. They're still close to the game. Why shouldn't they be on a panel talking about the CFL? 70% of the players are black. Why can't we have 70% of the panel?
Right.
But so many people said, "Well, I didn't even notice that. Why'd you have to bring it up?" As if I was like offending people proactively for celebrating, you know, what you guys have done. And now, Jermaine, you know, you're on SportsCenter, and which is really, really important. I said before, overdue. Now, there's you, obviously there's Caleb, but, you know, Cabby is gone and Nabil is gone and Gurdeep is gone. So that representation really, really matters. Do you guys hear, from people about why that representation matters? Do you hear from the community itself? I'll start with you, Milt, and then go to you, Jermaine, about what it means to see you guys in your roles.
It's funny you bring that up because 99% of the time I'm in Toronto, and we all know Toronto is not a big CFL city. But when I'm in town and I'm out and about, I'll have people. I've had a bunch of Jamaican people come up to me and say, "Man, you're that guy that covers the CFL, right? We like watching you on TV. We like watching you. We like watching you." So that makes me feel that these individuals like watching somebody who looks like them, you know, who has the same skin color as them. And that just puts me in a mindset of like, wow, you know, a difference is being made. They may not enjoy what's going on. They may not be CFL fans, but they are watching somebody who looks like them. Maybe their kids are being impacted in a positive way, something like that. They're seeing somebody who looks like them doing something they may want to do in the future, a positive role model like that. So I've had that experience a few times in Toronto. And like I said, we all know Toronto is not a big CFL city, but there are individuals. When I go to the airport, there's people who looking at me like, "I know you. I don't know where I know you from, but I know you." They're giving me that eye and saying, you know, so that's pretty cool that people are recognizing me in that manner.
Yeah, I agree. I don't hear about it a ton, Donovan. I think it might be because of the time we're in right now with the pandemic, and you don't really see too many people on the street. But honestly, yeah, every once in a while, I'll get that notice or so forth that people are watching and they enjoy seeing me. I'll give you a quick little story. As I just said, I don't say too much Ebonics on air just the other day. I said, what did I say? It was the Monster Jam by Edwards of Minnesota, and I just brought out the Jamaican patois for fun. I said, "Lot of mercy," and my cousins, and then all their friends, and then their friends, they all they all like rewound it, recorded it, hooked up, put me on WhatsApp. They're like, "This was the best," like that, and they're just like, "Okay, that's representation right there." Right. People are they love to see themselves. They love, and I was like, "All right, I won't forget that. I won't forget that at all." And that's just one little story where they're, I'm like, "Yep, people are paying attention. People are watching." And they appreciate seeing me on air as well at times.
Well, I think the important thing, and you guys are a great example of it, is you can be authentically yourself and authentically Black and show that Black people are not a monolith. I think we're all put in a box and we're all supposed to sound the same and talk the same and walk the same and dress the same. But Jermaine, your sensibilities and experience is certainly different than Milt's. Which is different than mine, which is different than Dee Ford's. And the world treats us all the same. But certainly we have our own experiences. We're just, you know, put all together in a census because we have the same, you know, skin color. But I love the fact that you guys, again, represent uniformly for us, but do it differently and show and express that we are different. Milt, for you, when you're in a locker room and you're being covered and, you know, you're talking to the media and you're having these relationships, to see someone like Jermaine in the locker room, what does that mean to you as a player? Put yourself in their shoes. Why is that important for the players to see some representation in the media?
Well, it means that there's someone who understands me. When I first got to the CFL, I was real laid back, unassuming, because, you know, this is my first time spending a lot of time in Canada. I was trying to fill out the scene. But as I got more adjusted to it, I started opening up, and Milt Stegall opened up. I'm real brass. I'm real loud. And some of the white media members, they didn't understand that. That's how a lot of African-Americans are. You know, we just speak loud. We're very out there. But then if you see another person of color, they understand you a little bit more. When they ask the questions and the answers they get, they're not intimidated. They understand the way you're speaking. They understand why you're giving those answers. And it makes the relationship a lot easier. The media eventually got used to me, but early on, those first 2 or 3 years, it was some bumping of heads because they thought I was being mean. They thought I was being overbearing. It thought, you know, it wasn't their type of what they didn't get used to it. But when you see someone of your same skin color, they understand where you're coming from. They understand somewhat the things you've gone through because they've gone through a lot of them. So as I mentioned earlier, the answers you give them and the way you give it to them, they understand 100% why you're coming that way.
Well, that's why I love you on the panel, because it's such a breath of fresh air, especially when you were put in that role, because, you know, you're not just giving us analysis. You're taking us to church a little bit. You're giving us, you know, a little call and response, right, where I kind of want to, you know, jump up and say amen and fan myself up. But you've done that on social media as well. Well, you've been very outspoken, very vocal. It's nothing new, but certainly, you know, given the racial reckoning we've had, there's certainly more of a spotlight on it. Why have you felt so comfortable? Why also have you felt the need, the necessity to?
Well, unfortunately, when my father was coming up, he went through a lot. My father was born in 1922 in rural Georgia, and he told me of the things he went through and some of the things his family had to go through. And he said, well, if you ever get a platform where you can make a difference, where you can use your voice, because he couldn't, make sure you use it. So that's what I'm just trying to do. I'm trying to use my voice, trying to set a great example, not only for my kids, but for other individuals out there who don't have a voice, who are going through some injustice and not having the opportunity to speak their mind. So that's what I'm just trying to do, trying to set a good example. I'm not trying to ruffle any feathers. I'm just trying to let individuals know these are the things that I see. These are my opinions. You don't have to agree with them. This is just what I see, and this is the way I look at things, and this is the way I feel about them. So I just want to set a good example. I know a lot of people don't agree with it. Hey, as long as they're looking at it, as long as they're talking about it, as long as they're dialogue, I think the movement is going in the right direction.
And you mentioned kids, and before I let you guys go, I kind of want to touch on that. You know, Milt, you have young sons, right? What do you say to them in these moments when we're seeing these images time and time again on social media and on TV? What's that conversation like for you?
It's scary. My oldest son, he takes his driver's test next month. My wife and I, we're scared to death because we know it's not when, or it's not if it's going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. And we're trying to teach him and tell him what to do when it happens. You know, you obey whatever they say. You don't answer any unwanted questions, but you obey them. You do whatever it takes. And as long as you make it home, we'll deal with it after that. So it's scary. We've had those conversations. We're having them with him every day. I mean, we almost want to put him in a situation where he does get stopped and he does have to go through that, you know, but it's a scary situation because we see it happening too often right now. So we just try to put him, educate him as much as we can. We're showing videos of what happens when you do and when you don't obey. So we're just trying to educate him as much as he can. And hopefully every time he leaves his house, he comes back home.
Yeah, I mean, I remember having the talk, you know, with my dad, and the crazy thing about it, and I don't know if this is the same case for you, Jermaine, is that talk that my dad had with me, like, you know, now I'm not as close to you guys as to having it, but certainly I think about it proactively having it with my son. And if I were to have it today, the talk would sound verbatim the same as the way my dad had with me. Yeah. And that's generations and no change, right? Which is scary. Like, I could just outsource the experience and say, yo, dad, you've done this, handle it for me. But I would love for there to be some progress. Jermaine, when you think about, you know, having these conversations with your kids, and I should mention that it's not just the conversations that we have to have with young boys, but also young Black women as well.
Yes.
You know, say her name is a hashtag for a reason. It's because it's true. We don't focus on our young girls. But what are these types of talks for you, Jermaine, you know, with the young people in your family?
It's been eye-opening. And we've had, like I said, Donovan and Milt, this has been a different year. So I have always talked to my kids. I have a son. He's 15. And he's 6 feet. So when I see him coming down the steps, I'm just like, oh my goodness. Like nobody will know my son is only 15 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like if he
they see big black man, that's what they see.
Yeah, they see that. And if he reacts in an immature manner and they think that he's actually, you know, 19 or 20 or 21, there's going to be issues. And that genuinely scares me. My daughter, she's 18 months older than Sam. Her name's Micah. She's 16. We've had the conversation many times. Well, we had the conversation again this summer after George Floyd. And this time, we had it as a family via Zoom. So their cousins were on the call and it was eye-opening because my son and daughter, they started talking about their experiences that they never told me about. Sammy, Sammy said, oh yeah, I've been called the N-word on the ice a few times. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I just didn't tell you, Dad, because I didn't want you to get mad. I, you know, you're the coach. And I was like, and my daughter's like, oh yeah, we've been followed in the mall. Like literally a security guard followed me throughout a store before I left. And I was just blown away. I guess not that it happened, but that it happened, if that makes any sense. These are experiences. Yeah. These are experiences that we've had, but you always think that it's a little bit of a different world for your kids, and it's not. And
it's not.
It is not. And they've been doing a lot of growing up on their own that they don't even tell you. They don't even tell you until the time is right. And it was eye-opening, and the conversation still happens with driving. You're right, Milt. Like when you get pulled over, have your stuff on the dash. Have it. You know, insurance, license, hands on the wheel, window slightly, like, do not give them an excuse. You cannot. And I even me saying the word them is, I feel bad, but when it's survival mode, like, you have to be prepared, calm, and mature. And that's the message that I give my kids every chance I get.
Yeah, so them was an operative word. The other operative word you said in that is when you get pulled over, not if, when you get pulled over, right? Because it's just a shared understanding, almost like a rite of passage that, like, driving while black is going to happen to you, right?
Yes.
It's powerful to hear that was your kid's experience, because it's almost like, you know, it was the default. Like, they kind of already understood that, yeah, of course that happened to us. That's the experience. Yeah. Of being black, and specifically around driving, you know, for most kids, 16 can drive, get some freedom. It's such a milestone. That's excitement. But for us, that comes with trauma and reservation and being careful. And so that even that, we can't really fully celebrate that. And so, you know, Black History Month is about celebrating our successes and our joys, but also having these, you know, important conversations. And I do think we should celebrate the great strides that, you know, black people have made within sport, within the CFL specifically. But we also have to have those, you know, those uncomfortable conversations. Let's get the positive first. You know, we'll start with Milton and go to you, Jermaine. In terms of things, people, initiatives within football, within the CFL, that we should celebrate that black people have been a part of, what jumps to your mind?
Well, I mean, just throughout, not only in the CFL, but just throughout football in general. We're starting to see, and we're still a long ways away, we're starting to see more executives, black executives. You know, we're still a long ways away from where it should be, but people are starting to open up their eyes to understand that these executives, these black executives, black GMs, whatever it may be, they have the knowledge, they have the wherewithal, they have enough underneath their belt where they can also get the job done. They just need opportunities. In football, it's all about, it's so much nepotism involved. It's about, okay, I want to hire this guy because this is my best friend, or I've coached with him many other times, whatever it may be. But there's so many blacks out there who deserve an opportunity to be executive, to be GMs, to be head of player personnel. And now, like I said before, it's not where it should be, but we're starting to see trinkles of that throughout professional football, period. So that's something that I think that's going in the right direction.
When I think about the CFL and the strides that this league has helped the, I guess, pro football make, like, I'll be honest, I still think about Warren Moon and what he did with the Edmonton Eskimos and the eyes that he opened as a black quarterback in pro football. And I think, and now, just fast forward it, I think about Steinauer, an outstanding head coach. And these are things that should not go unnoticed. And these are things that shouldn't be taken for granted. Not yet. Like, this is the way it could be. And like Milt said, with more hires, this is the way it should be. And I think the CFL has always been a leader in that sense. And I think it's pretty special. And I know Ed Hervey isn't in the league right now, but the accomplishments that he made as a GM in short fashion. The CFL is a leader when it comes to that, and I hope that the league continues to be.
Another one, Roy Shivers. You think about what Roy Shivers was able to,
right?
You know, you can't forget Roy. You know,
no, you can't. Like, you're right, Mel. Like, amazing.
Yeah, and you know, the motto for the league is diversity is strength, and all that. Though that's true, you only, as you guys know, because you're in much better shape than I am, you only keep your strength if you continue to work on it and work on that muscle and improve it. And so, you know, as we move out, whether it's, you know, the league or sport in general, what can we do, you know, from an anti-Black racism standpoint, from an inclusion and diversity standpoint, from a humanity standpoint, to continue moving in the right direction? You know, Jermaine, I'll start with you this time.
Well, what we can do is continue to build within our communities. It starts with the grassroots. If you can be a positive role model for the kids as they grow up and move forward with the grassroots, I think it's a win. I think it's a win. And the one thing that coming back just recently, like you said, Donovan, but now that I'm on the desk, that's one of the things that I'm searching for. And I know once things open up, it'll be a lot easier to become more a part of the communities surrounding the area. And I think that's huge. I think that's where it all starts, and that's where you have to start.
Well, I think the most important thing is we have to make sure that we are moving in the right direction. And a lot of people tend to think, and I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but a lot of people tend to think that we're really not moving in the right direction. It's not getting any better. And, you know, I try to be an optimistic person. I want to say it is. And maybe those steps are real slow. Maybe not even steps. Maybe we're crawling. But I tend to believe that as long as we're moving, as long as we're going forward, progress, I mean, is obvious, is being made. It's going to take some individuals who aren't necessarily impacted by it, some powerful individuals to speak up and say these things need to be done before big steps are actually going to be made. But just keep moving in the right direction, doing whatever you can. Everyone needs to do their part. Even if you think your part is small, even if you think your part isn't making a difference, just do your part. And I think if that happens, we'll continue going in the right direction and eventually, hopefully, get into the place where we want to be.
Well said. Well, you two guys specifically with this conversation in Canada have been people that have led, have been at the forefront and helping to drag us, even those who are unwilling, in the right direction. So I do appreciate that. I appreciate everything you do because I know it's not easy, but you guys have done it so flawlessly. An example of Black excellence, an example why, you know, we have to have these conversations, not just in February. So thank you for having it with me now and humoring me and educating me. Appreciate you both.
Thanks. And last question. I got a last question for you guys. You know, we talk about Black excellence, but my question is, out of us three, I wonder who dresses the best. You know, we all think we're great dressers, but I just want to throw that out there. I know what my answer is, so I want to ask you guys what your answer is.
I think my answer and your answer is the same. I think I'm going to give it to you. No disrespect, Jermaine. The problem
that's not what your wife tells me. That's not what I hear about what you do. I hear about that.
It's funny you say that because the problem is my fashion style is just wear what the women around you tell you you should wear.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So my wife has an issue with that answer because she's the one who's picked out most of the things in my wardrobe. But I'm gonna give it to you. Maybe on a hanger, it might not look the best if you took, you know, three of our items of clothing and put them on a hanger. I might not pick yours, but when you wear it, you really wear it. You sell it. I'm going to give it to you, Milt.
I was going to say that too, Donovan. Like, Milt, you're too pretty, so you can make anything look good.
True. That is true. I agree 100%.
A Glad bag, and it'd be like, man, Milt rocked that. So I'll give it to Milt this time.
Oh, man. Appreciate you both. Appreciate you both. Can't wait for the Milt Stiegel line of clothing so I can just wear it and look like you. Thanks, fellas.
Yeah, body not included.
Yes, exactly.
Thanks, Donovan.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, thank you.
Man, I can't thank those two guys enough. Milt taking time in Atlanta, Jermaine now in the same city as me in Toronto, giving their perspectives, even though different experiences, there are some commonalities that run through it. So really appreciate them being so candid, open, and honest with me. And if you want more for them, make sure you give them a follow. Milt is on Twitter at Milt Stiegel, TSN, and Jermaine is on Twitter at TSN J Franklin. Thank you again to them for sharing their time and their voice to what is an important conversation, one that we're committed to have continually in this very space. So don't think because February's over and Black History Month is soon to be over, that we're going to stop having this conversation. We're going to continue it, and we want to have it with you. So interact with us, engage with us. Let us know what you feel, how your experiences have been as fans. At CFL on Twitter and on Instagram. And we're also looking for your interaction on Facebook as well. And while you're online, make sure to like, favorite, share, subscribe to this very podcast, because we do it for you, the fan, the real fuel of the league. Until next time, thanks for listening.
The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.